Today we're going to take a little break from our look at the prophet Isaiah and go back into the historical information that is in 2 Kings. I want you to open to 2 Kings chapter number 18, and we're going to particularly go to verse number 10 in a moment. The year is now 723 BC. The prophets that we've been looking at have been trying to prep the people of northern Israel and southern Judah for the arrival of the Assyrians into the region. How they were going to sweep through and bring God's judgment against the peoples of the lower Middle East. And how northern Israel, in particular, is going to go into exile, and southern Judah is going to suffer as well. Although, the guarantee is that Jerusalem itself will not fall to the Assyrians. So historically, we know that in the spring or summer of 725 BC, the Assyrian army invaded northern Israel, and as part of their process, they began besieging the capital city of Samaria. So that goes on throughout the rest of 725, throughout 724, and then into the beginning of 723 BC. And so that's where we're at right now. We're 2 Kings chapter 18, verse, let's start at verse 9 to get the full chronology here. In the fourth year of King Hezekiah, which was the seventh year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel, Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Samaria and besieged it. Now, this Shalmaneser is a future king of Assyria, but currently he is the commander representing his father, Sennacherib, I believe is his name. And so that is a reference to the 725 date. Verse 10, and at the end of 3 years, he took it. So that brings us to 723 BC. In the sixth year of Hezekiah, which was the ninth year of Hoshea, king of Israel, Samaria was taken. The king of Assyria carried the Israelis away to Assyria and put them in Hala and on the Harbor, which is a tributary to the Euphrates River, the river of Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes. Now, the Medes live over on the east side of the Tigris River, in what is modern-day Iran. The area of Hala and Habor are in much more northern Assyrian Empire territory. I believe they are up in what is now Armenia and Azerbaijan, I believe. So what happens is that the Assyrians have adopted a mechanism of control, that when they take over an area and they have subdued the local inhabitants, they've destroyed a lot of their main cities and killed a lot of the inhabitants that have been resisting, they take a large portion of the survivors and they move them to another place. It breaks the land connection. So that's a familiarity. It makes the people off-kilter and therefore, theoretically, easier to control. You put them into a strange land and they're spending all their time trying to figure out, how do I live here? What am I supposed to do? Sort of thing. Now, there's an added dimension to this from a spiritual viewpoint. Remember, we've talked to this idea that many people believed that their gods were localized. And the farther you got away from the God's power center, the less strong that God was. And so by taking the people away from their God's home territory, you broke their connection with that God. And so for all these reasons, the Assyrians shift conquered peoples around. We'll actually talk in a little bit about who they moved back into the region of northern Israel. Let's read verse 12. Because they did not obey the voice of He who is their God, but transgressed His covenant, even all that Moses, the servant of He who is commanded, they neither listened nor obeyed. So this is the explanation at this juncture for why northern Israel went into Assyrian exile in 723 BC. If we go back to chapter 17, verse number 6, we get a much more detailed record of why these things happened. And so that's where we want to camp out now for a little bit. If we start at verse 6, we get the chronology again. The ninth year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria captured Samaria, and he carried the Israelis away to Assyria and placed them in Hala and on the Harbor, the river of Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes. So repeated material. But look at verse 7. And this occurred because the people of Israel had sinned against He who is their God, who had brought them up out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and had feared other gods and walked in the customs of the nations whom He who is drove out before the people of Israel, and in the customs that the kings of Israel had practiced. So this section of 2 Kings 17 is like a reeb. It is like a lawsuit. It specifies the reasons why God invoked the curses of the book of Deuteronomy, why He divorced northern Israel and sent them packing. It's because God brought them out of Egypt, gave them a home in the promised land, and told them, don't be like the people I'm kicking out. Don't be like the Canaanites. Destroy all their stuff. Get rid of them. If you don't and you start acting like them, I will kick you out of here myself. And so this is the explanation as to why the exile of northern Israel took place in 723 BC. Verse number 9. And the people of Israel did secretly against He who is their God things that were not right. So sometimes they did it on the sly. Other times they did it right out in the open. They built for themselves high places in all their towns, from watchtower to fortified city. So a watchtower kind of is like a fortified position, and maybe there'd be a community grow up around it. But it would be mostly rural. And then the fortified city, full-blown walls and gates and the double security walls, all of that. So they started building pagan worship sites near all the places that they lived. Verse 10, they set up for themselves pillars and Asherim on every high hill and under every green tree. And there they made offerings on all the high places, as the nations did whom He who is carried away from before them. So that's the reference to the Canaanites. So they were out there building these stone pillars, probably, to Baal. And they were building wooden pillars, totem poles perhaps, or sacred trees, to Asherah. So it's the female-male partnership, Baal, the god of lightning and thunder and grain, Asherah, the goddess of the sky and fertility and the earth and all of that. And so they did what they'd been told not to do. And they did wicked things, provoking he who is to anger. And they served idols, of which he who is had said to them, "You shall not do this." So very specific instructions they blew off. You remember how the Ten Commandments, which were the first spoken commandments of God, kind of an overall, a catch-all of what he expected from them. "You shall have no other gods before me. You shall make no images of gods." They blew it all off. Yet he who is warned Israel and Judah. Again, as this is written down, there is a constant reminder that Judah is on the same stupid path of rebellion. And they are facing judgment as well, and exile as well. They've got a little bit of a grace period because of a good leader that they have right now, King Hezekiah. But things will go downhill pretty quickly as Hezekiah finishes his reign. Yet he who is warned Israel and Judah by every prophet and every seer, saying, "Turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes in accordance with all the law that I commanded your fathers and that I sent to you by my servants, the prophets." So this is a long-term warning that God has been giving them. When we are looking at the capture of Samaria in 723 BC, Israel as a nation, that is northern Israel, has existed for 216 years, which tells us that the entirety of the Promised Land has been occupied by the entire ethnic group of Israelis for over 700 years. And God has been telling them the whole time, "Knock it off with the breaking of my commandments. Turn, repent, come back, do the right thing." And they've been blowing him off all this time. Verse 14, "But they would not listen, but were stubborn as their fathers had been, who did not believe in he who is their God." That's probably a reference to that first generation in the wilderness that didn't even make it to the Promised Land. "They despised his statutes and his covenant that he made with their fathers and the warnings that he gave them. They went after false idols and became false." Now, the idols, as we're told in the New Testament, often represented true spiritual beings, fallen angels. But they were not true gods, and therefore this worship paraphernalia, these idols, were illegitimate. So they were false. And by doing this, these people became participants in that false narrative. They followed the nations, the goyim, the non-Israelis that were around them, concerning whom he who is had commanded them that they should not do like them. So again, bad company corrupts good morals. That's what the Apostle Paul says as a proverb. These guys were told, don't hang out with the pagans, because if you do, you're going to start being like them. Well, they did it anyway. And exactly as God said, they became like them. They abandoned all the commandments of he who is their God and made for themselves metal images of two calves. We know that's the beginning of northern Israel's history. The first king of northern Israel was concerned that if his people kept going to the temple at Jerusalem, that they would eventually come to the conclusion, why do we need a separate kingdom? and that he'd be out of a job and probably be executed. And so he comes up with the idea of making two golden calves, which he'd been in Egypt recently. This is Jeroboam the First. He'd been in Egypt recently in exile, and he, like Aaron before him, would have come to the understanding that in Egypt, the Creator God is sometimes represented physically by a bull. And so Jeroboam thought, I'll just make a representation of the Creator God. I'll put one at Dan, I'll put one at Bethel, and I'll tell the people, hey, you don't need to go all the way to Jerusalem to worship the Creator God. Here, you can worship him at these two places. You can worship the God who brought you out of Egypt at Dan and Bethel. So here it is mentioned as one of the big sins. They made an Asherah, the either totem-like pole or the living tree that was devoted to the Queen of Heaven, the Mother Goddess. And it seems as if they put them not just in the temple at Samaria, you know, because they had a temple there. Ahaz may have actually put something like that in the temple at Jerusalem. So they worshiped all the host of heaven, and they served Baal. Again, Baal being the Canaanite thunder and lightning god, the chief god that the Israelis should not have been worshiping, but they did anyway. Then comes verse 17. And they burned their sons and their daughters as offerings. That's a reference to the worship of Chemosh Molech, the destroyer king that first came into existence because of Moab and Ammon, the sons of Lot, who came into existence through a sick circumstance of drunkenness and impregnation. And all of this followed the fiery destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. And it seems as if those two people groups developed a god image of this destroyer god of Sodom and Gomorrah as one that you needed to bear up offspring on purpose that you could give to him so that he wouldn't destroy the rest of your offspring. And this spread all over the lower Middle East, even up into the upper Middle East. And so people would go to these drunken musical parties and purposely impregnate women and then harvest those kids as sacrificial animals. The Israelis were doing that. Unfortunately, some of the Judeans were doing it. Ahaz apparently participated in that. And so God's list of reasons why he's not letting these people stay in the promise list includes this. They burned their sons and their daughters as offerings. They used divination and omens. This is trying to reach into the unseen world. This is contacting the spirit world, which has always been off limits. Listen up, believers. You should not be trying to reach into the spirit world to get information. The only information you need from the spirit world is right there in your scripture. You don't need anything beyond that. Peter said, we have everything we need for life and godliness right here. So don't be doing Ouija boards. Don't be doing the horoscopes. Don't be reading the tea leaves. Don't be consulting with the spiritists. That's one of the things that God is saying got these guys kicked out of the land. Divination and omens. They sold themselves to do evil in the sight of he who is, provoking him to anger. And therefore, he who is was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. None was left but the tribe of Judah only. So, the northern Israelis are now history. They're out of the land. Judah gets a reprieve. But they still are under God's judgment. Judah also did not keep the commandments of He who is their God, but walked in the custom that Israel had introduced. And He who has rejected all the descendants of Israel and afflicted them and gave them into the hand of plunderers until He had cast them out of His sight. That tells me this particular section in the book of 2 Kings was likely written by a prophet writer after southern Judah went into Babylonian exile. Verse 21, when He had torn Israel from the house of David, they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king, and Jeroboam drove Israel from following He who is and made them commit great sin. That's the golden calf incidents. The people of Israel walked in all the sins that Jeroboam did. They did not depart from them until He who is removed Israel out of His sight, as He had spoken by all His servants, the prophets. And so Israel was exiled from their own land to Assyria until this day. And again, that tells me that whoever's writing this particular section must be after, not just simply the Assyrian exile and after the Babylonian exile, but before the return from the exiles. Verse 24. The king of Assyria, and this is a later king, not the king that takes the Israelis away. The king of Assyria brought people from Babylon, Kutah, Avava, Hamat, Sepharvaim, and placed them in the cities of Samaria instead of the people of Israel. Remember, we talked at the very beginning of the session today that the Assyrians were in the habit of shifting population groups around to kind of keep them all stirred up and off kilter. So after the Israelis had been removed from the northern territory, a few years pass, and then the Assyrian king that is in power at that time moves a different people group in there that he doesn't want them to be in their home territory anymore. In fact, for some of the things here, it seems like they shift them opposite one another. So they took possession of Samaria. They lived in its cities. At the beginning of their dwelling there, they did not fear He who is. So when they first show up, they know nothing about He who is. And therefore, He who is sent lions among them, which killed some of them. Now, one of the things that happens when a land goes empty of people is that the wild animal population fills the void. And the king of the beasts, the lions, they kind of become the main predator, the apex predator. And so when these guys get moved in, they start dying at the hands of these lions. And they automatically assume that's because we don't know the God of this land. Verse 26, so the king of Assyria was told, the nations, the goyim, the non-Israelis, that you have carried away and placed in the cities of the Samaria, they don't know the law of the God of the land. Therefore, He sent lions among them. Behold, they're killing them because they don't know the law of the God of the land. Now, why would the king of Assyria care? Well, because he expects these guys to work the land and pay their taxes, to pay their tribute. Well, he can't get much done if they're being killed off by animals. So the king of Assyria commanded, send there one of the priests whom you carried away from there. Let him go and dwell there and teach them the law of the God of the land. Now, at first glance, that almost sounds like a good idea. This guy's going to come and tell them all about Yahweh. Not so quick. Remember, these are northern Israelis. They got kicked out of the land because they associated Yahweh with the golden calves. Verse 28. So one of the priests whom they had carried away from Samaria came and lived in, guess where? Bethel, the headquarters of one of the golden calf worship sites. And he taught them how they should fear He who is, but it's in the form of the golden calf. But every nation still made gods of their own and put them in the shrines of the high places that the Samaritans had made. This is the first time we see the idea of Samaritans as a people group. What we're seeing here is kind of the foundational beginning of the later group we call Samaritans. They are a mixed group of foreigners and Israelis who have histories with gods and goddesses that are not legit. All right, so continuing. The men of Babylon made Sukkot, Benot. The men of Kut made Nergal. The men of Hamat made Ashima. The Avavites made Nahaz and Tartak. The Shepharvims burned their children in the fire to Adrammelech and Anammelech and the gods of the Shepharvim. Don't worry about trying to understand who these gods and goddesses are. We don't need to know that. All you need to know is these guys are pagans. They also feared he who is. See, that's the thing. They start mixing it with a bad understanding of he who is. And appointed from among themselves all sorts of people as priests at the high places who sacrifice for them in the shrines of the high places. So they feared he who is. So they're going through the motions, but they also serve their own gods after the manner of the nations from among whom they had been carried away. To this day, they do according to the former manner. Now, we've run out of time almost, so I'm going to break in right here and just remind you again. What we're seeing in this passage is kind of the beginning story of the Samaritans that are problematic in the story of the return, but also problematic in the story of the New Testament period as well. Go ahead and mark your place right there, and the next time God gives us the chance, we'll get back into the Word.